Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the ball.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yo.
Hey.
Okay, good.
What on earth is happening?
I don't know. What's up?
Not much. I was able to watch, I haven't seen all the game, but I was able to watch a fair amount, and I read, like, the recaps and looked at the box scores and stuff, and I've watched all their previous games, so I think I'm good to talk about. I'm just reading your description now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, this all sounds good to me.
Okay.
I think talking about the exciting is interesting. Definitely need to talk about, like, the other teams and the Jazz and stuff.
Yeah.
Gallinari. The guard rotation is really interesting. Because, I mean, now he's bringing Milos off the bench, too. And, like, what? Wallace got 12 seconds of time in the last game, and Thornwell got, like, 30. Yeah, I think this all looks good, to be honest. We have a fair amount to talk about, I think. But, yeah, I'm just setting up the other stuff. Like, I guess the schedule isn't really that important because they have so long off until after the All-Star break. But,
yeah.
Game tomorrow. I'll just bring up the box score from yesterday. But, yeah, I think I'm ready to go. Is there anything else besides what you have in here?
That's about it. I mean, yeah, that's about it. I mean, I guess we can go into a little detail of the Detroit game, but
okay.
I'm kind of over that game already, but we can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, we could talk about that. We could touch briefly on how Griffin has played. I guess I could go into part of the Detroit thing, but Pistons fans are souring on him already. Which is
I saw Detroit bad boys, and it's pretty great. I love it.
Yeah. But I'm ready to go.
Okay, sounds good. Let me pull up that box score, that Detroit game, too. Okay, I probably won't be more than like a half hour for this pod because I gotta go. I don't think we need too much more. There's a bunch to talk about, but crazy detail. Okay, ready? Rob?
Sorry, I muted myself. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, I'm going to get started. right, I'm just going to start because we still don't have an intro because of Blake, but I'll start. What's up, everyone? It's the Lob, the Jam, the podcast, back here with you after another Clippers Blake Griffin-less win, 114-101 over the Brooklyn Nets yesterday. We've got a nice game tomorrow against the Boston Celtics. I'm here, as always, with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm good. Oh, Rob, I'll just start over. Do you want to put a Twitter feeler out there?
Oh, yeah, good call.
Yeah, I'll just start over.
Okay, sounds good.
I'll do the intro while you do that. Okay.
Hi.
What's up, everyone? It's the Lob, the Jam, the podcast, back with you as always after a Clipper win. Well, not as always, but conveniently, an LA Clippers win over the Brooklyn Nets, 114-101, with the Boston Celtics game coming up tomorrow. I'm here as always with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I am doing well. The Clippers had a nice game yesterday when they looked pretty, you know, they looked pretty dominant against an inferior team. But games in New Jersey / Brooklyn, I guess Brooklyn, have not been the fondest of the Clippers. There's a crazy statistic that was flashed up. I think during the Chris Paul era, the Clippers have won like once in Brooklyn. And
yeah,
they've had some pretty hilarious losses with some huge flameout leads given up. You know, I think we can remember those three-pointers in the corner by that Anderson dude that was on our team like last year. What was his name? Forget his first name. But and of course, last year we had that pretty bad flameout when pretty much the Clippers were at the peak of their seasonal powers. I think it was the game that was soon after that Cowboys fiasco when the Clippers went to see the Cowboys play. And then they lost pretty spectacularly in double overtime and after losing like a fourth quarter lead that was like 17 or something. It was pretty bad. But the Nets definitely, Brooklyn has not been a fun place for the Clippers to play at, despite the fact that the Brooklyn Nets have been quite bad for quite some time. But yesterday's win was very comfortable, aside from a very brief, small comeback by the Nets when they cut it to like 9 or something. But I don't think the game was ever in doubt. You know, you felt uneasy probably just because of the circumstances. But Clippers did a really good job taking a look at the box. It was very, very well balanced. Nobody had over 20 points, and 7 Clippers was scored in double figures, led by Lou Williams with a pretty measly 20 points. You could barely even tell that he had 20 points. Austin Rivers had 17 and some clutch buckets. DeAndre Jordan was fairly involved offensively for once with 16 points. Danilo Gallinari continues his strong play with 16. Tobias Harris chipped in 10. And Montrezl Harrell, as always, was a super efficient 6 of 6 for 15 points. How'd you like that game, Rob?
So I will say that I wasn't able to catch most of it on the first watch. I saw like maybe a quarter, but I'm back in Michigan right now visiting my girlfriend, so there was other stuff going on. But I rewatched most of it today, and I checked out all the recaps and all that kind of stuff, and it was a good game, I think, because like you mentioned, the Nets are always kind of tough. Even though they're not good, they play really hard. Atkinson's a fantastic coach, and they're just like very competent. They just don't have much talent. Like, they play the right way, they move the ball, they compete. And those kinds of teams are always capable of getting just sneak wins, even without much talent. So I really like that the Clippers had a very no-nonsense game. They went in. There was a bit of a slip-up in the fourth quarter when the Nets came back. But even with that, I didn't really feel like the Clippers were ever going to lose this one. And, like you said, everybody played well. It was a really good sign to see a reinvigorated DeAndre Jordan. I think this is the best he's played in like a couple weeks, I'd say. And they did this even with, as you said, the worst game from Tobias Harris we've seen. He only had 10 points on 12 shots, but it was good to see that he pulled down 8 rebounds. That was really nice. Everybody chipped in. I think the first thing we should really talk about, though, is that there are a lot of different rotations in this game. Like, the Clippers are finally approaching fully healthy, barring Pat Beverly, who's out for the season. The only guy who's still out is Juwan Evans, who's going to be out till after the All-Star break with his abdominal. And I guess you can count C.J. Williams, but I don't think we're going to see him again this season. They're approaching full health, and Doc has finally got most of his rotation back. So there was a lot of changes to be seen here. What was the most interesting thing about, like, the new rotations to you?
I guess Austin Rivers starting at point guard is kind of interesting. I don't know if this is going to be something going forward, this entire Austin Avery starting and Lou and Teodosic off the bench, as has been broadcasted on this podcast and in various other probably Clipper media. Lou Williams and Milos Teodosic is a defensive nightmare. And, of course, the Nets made a comeback when those two were on the floor and seemed to be hitting every three possible. You know, Milos is great. I love Milos. He's a very nice player. But combining him with Lou just really makes the team vulnerable. Austin Rivers, of course, played fantastically yesterday. Really kind of closed out the game. But he's kind of an awkward fit at point guard, starting point guard. I almost still feel like Milos Bradley and Austin Lou off the bench is the best sort of combination, more so because Milos can be kind of covered up by Bradley's defensive prowess. Milos also has a good connection with DeAndre Jordan, whereas I know Austin Rivers had some nice lobs to DJ, and some would argue, including one of my buddies who was texting me, that Austin he was arguing that Austin has the best connection with DeAndre Jordan. I don't particularly agree with that.
Nah.
I do think Milos and Lou have the best connections with DJ. So having Milos out there and then even Lou at times, so DJ isn't just with Austin and Bradley, who just don't know how to really connect with them on the regular. I just think the guard rotations have a lot to be kind of desired. And I almost just feel like you should just treat Bradley sort of like we treated, Patrick Beverley, where he would be the defensive stopper and we can have Milos next to him, and Beverley would kind of cover up Milos' deficiencies, and then we can have Lou and Austin kind of already. We know that they complement each other fairly well. Austin can cover up for Lou's defensive deficiencies. And Lou does a really good job handling the point guard duties when he has to do some ball handling and run some pick and roll. He does a good job with that. So that's really my biggest thing. So I'm not a huge fan of the guard rotation right now. And Austin Rivers, whenever he runs plays, you know, God bless him, it's just always like one thing. Like whenever there's floppy being run, you could see him looking for those specific players running off the screens and thinking, I need to pass it to this guy. Or when he runs pick and roll, he thinks, where is DeAndre? It feels very much detracting from his general game. Like, it's not letting him just play. You know, he's an offensive scorer on the offensive end. I think making him a playmaker detracts from a lot of what makes Austin good. And I very much felt that in this game, even though he had a great line, you know, 17-4, great shooting, didn't even really turn the ball over too much. Like, he did fairly well, but I just feel like this isn't really utilizing his strengths. So what do you think about the guard rotation?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that he went with Bradley and Rivers, because of the Clippers' four guards, those are the two that are least like a point guard. They're both really shooting guards. Austin is a better ball handler and probably a better playmaker than Bradley, but neither is a natural pass-first guy. I mean, Lou Williams is a far better distributor than either of them. And I believe Lucas said this on Twitter a couple days ago, and I tend to agree. I think Austin is really the one of the four that has to start, because he's the only one who can really consistently get to the basket off the dribble. I know Lou is pretty good at it, but Austin is just – he's bigger and he's stronger going downhill. He's more of a finisher, whereas Lou just tries to draw fouls or makes passes. And that type of creation, he can just create a little bit more than Bradley can. I think he's the guy who should be starting at shooting guard. And then the question would be, do you start Milos at point guard or Lou Williams? And I think despite how much I love Teodosic, which is a lot, he's been so much fun, I think of the four players, he's probably objectively the worst. I mean, Bradley's offensive game leaves a lot to be desired, but his defense is pretty good, whereas Teodosic is good offensively and is his defense is just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I would almost be tempted to start Lou and Austin together. Again, kind of matching up bad defense mm-hmm. with good offense. And it's just tricky because even though Teodosic himself, his stats aren't great and he just gets tortured on defense, the team just plays so much better when he plays. But at the same time, his defense is also so bad that it's hard to justify giving him that many minutes. So I think Teodosic, the minutes, he could have got a little more. He got 16 yesterday. It was right off an injury. And I know Doc is still tinkering, and it was also kind of a blowout for some of the second half. So maybe it would be a little higher in a closer game. But I think Teodosic should probably get minutes like in the 22 range or so. And then Bradley, I think it should be just more about playing time than really starting or just like who comes off the bench. I think Bradley should probably be in the mid-20s. And then I think Rivers and Lou should be around 30 apiece with a little bit of those three-guard lineups if more shot creation is needed. But, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think he's kind of playing Bradley a little bit too much. I like his energy and I like his defense. But his offensive game is really not super good. You know, all of his mid-range jumpers, just that needs to be like a fireable offense. He and Wes Johnson, every time they take a mid-range jumper off the dribble with more than like 6 or 7 seconds on the shot clock, they should be benched. I mean, they won't be, but they should be, because it's just it's a horrible shot. It just is. There are so many better shots you can get with those other guys on the floor, and for them to be taking as many of them as they do, particularly Bradley, Wes is more like a once-a-game thing. It's just really inexcusable. I mean, he doesn't really get to the free-throw line. He's a good three-point shooter. He just doesn't take enough of them. And, yeah, he's just kind of frustrating to watch. But when he gets into it on defense, it is really nice. I'm not going to lie. I think he's a bit overrated on that end just because he's more of like an individual guy than an overall team defender. But I'd probably start Austin and Milos and bring Milos off the bench for Lou at some point and then swap in Bradley and just kind of mix and match from there. But I think the other interesting thing is really, it's not that surprising, but with those four guys all healthy and playing, Tyrone Wallace played for 12 seconds. I think it was for like one defensive possession.
Yeah.
And Thornwell played for like 40 or something, again, for defense. And, you know, the Clippers were, I think, at their most fun this season, not necessarily at their best, but their most fun when they were playing all these young guys. And then you look up and down their rotation and the lineups yesterday, the young guys are mostly gone. Evans is injured, but I think even if he was healthy, I don't think he'd really be playing. Maybe spot minutes here or there. Decker got 5. Harrell, even though he was great, only got 12, though possibly just because Jordan was so good. But, I mean, this is just a different Clippers team right now. And, I mean, do you think this team is still fun to watch? Do you think they're going to be a fun team down the stretch with all these kind of middle-of-the-road veteran types?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like if Gallinari keeps playing the way he's playing so well. It's kind of like, I almost feel like the Clippers have a ton of players, a ton of depth, but if Gallo gets injured, and he probably will, I feel like it takes away a lot of what makes them potent. The fact that he has pretty much, you know, done really well being like the 2A to, I guess, lose 1A. And if we can kind of keep him going that way, that's great. I guess Tobias Harris can also kind of settle as almost a 3A sort of player. That's you know, it makes everything seem really versatile. But being able to switch and match Gallinari and Harris for each other all the time, and just, it's a really great luxury because they're similar players, but I think Harris is probably more of the 3 and Gallinari is more of the 4. But they're really not really playing that way. They can pretty much play whoever's the forward. And Doc has said as much in his interviews that they're pretty much just playing as forwards and mixing it up as much as possible. I think that having those two healthy is really important to how successful the Clippers can be. And I'm really just worried that Gallinari will eventually get hurt and like really mess with this forward rotation. I really like the forward rotation between Gallinari and Harris. And, you know, I guess you throw in some Wes Johnson in there and some Decker, But I like how Doc is working those two together and really making them interchangeable type pieces and keeping one in at all times to score. And I feel like when Gallinari gets hurt, like the Clippers are going to be pretty vulnerable again, whereas right now they just look like a really solid team. They're not particularly fun right now. I just kind of like how the team has all these weapons, and that's, I guess, fun in itself. You know, I do miss Tyrone Wallace. I think he's a nice piece. And, you know, even if Milos or somebody eventually gets hurt, hopefully not Milos because we really need his playmaking, but if we lost one of the guards, be it Bradley or Rivers, who are both fairly injury prone, I wouldn't mind just plugging in Wallace into their minutes and just rolling with it. But yeah, 12 seconds for a guy who's on a 2-day contract, that's it's pretty rough considering the productivity we've been getting from our two-way players all season long. Yeah, and I feel like if the team is healthy, then Wallace and Thornwell are pretty much just, you know, out of the rotation. So yeah, I don't know.
I think that's the correct decision if you're trying to win basketball games, and clearly that's what the Clippers are trying to do. I mean, there's no doubt at this point that they still want to make the playoffs this season, even after trading Blake, and that's what they said all along. That's what they've been saying all year, and that's what they're doing. And if you just go by who's the better player right now, I think that Doc is making the correct decision. I think they're not quite as fun without their young guys playing, and I think that it might come back to bite them, as you said, if they get injured and all of a sudden the young guys have been out of the rotation for a few weeks and maybe they're not quite as ready to step in right away. But I do think Wallace had slowed down a little bit the past week or two, especially offensively. I mean, I think he has a ton of potential. He's long and he's smart and he's pretty athletic, but his offensive game, just like basically every other Clippers rookie this year, except for Jamil Wilson to some extent, his offensive game really needs work because he relies a lot on these little like push shots and floaters around the basket, and he was draining them the first couple weeks he was up, but he's been missing a lot of them lately. It could be because teams are scouting him, or it could just be because he was on a hot streak. But those are like very difficult shots to rely on, and I think he needs to either finish at the rim a little bit more and just go stronger. Could be putting on bulk. Or getting slightly better handles to be able to get all the way past guys, or to really get – he needs some kind of a shot, really. But, yeah, I mean, he was so good for the Clippers, and it's sad that he's kind of out right now. But I think you just touched on the big thing here, which is I think the biggest reason the Clippers are still winning is that Danilo Gallinari all of a sudden looks like the player they signed this summer for $20 million a year, which is he looks like a fringe-ish all-star level player. His defense has really picked up. I mean, it's the shooting, I think, that everybody notices, which is he's actually finally making his shots. But I think he looks much quicker than he did for most of the season. He's moving his feet a lot better. He's still not really getting to the basket that much on offense, but it's definitely noticeable on the defensive end. He's sliding his feet way quicker than he was earlier in the year. And he and Harris, even though Harris has been a little inconsistent as well, they're like a much more modern forward combination than whatever the Clippers were doing than Gallinari and Griffin, because people thought Gallinari could really be a small forward. And even though he's better at power forward, from what we've seen this season, he should be a power forward full time. I don't really think he should be getting many minutes at all at small forward, maybe like a handful a game, but Ian and Harris just look pretty good out there. The chemistry obviously isn't perfect yet, but as just a combination, they're pretty good, and they're fairly versatile offensively. And the right teams would kind of wreck them on the defensive end, but I think that they look pretty good, and I think the team in general. And Montrezl Harrell, we've talked about him before, but the man just, I don't know if he'll ever miss another shot again. It's insane. I don't know, like, what kind of energy he's on, but there's, like, a real risk they could lose him this summer, because even though teams don't have much money and he's a big man, a small big man who can't shoot, like, he is really good, like, really good, and some team might sign him. Some team might want him to be their starting center. If there's a team who's thinking of going really small, he's not super quick on the perimeter, but he's not, like, that slow. There's a risk some team might overpay for him, or at least pay him more than the Clippers are be willing to match. So we might have to enjoy Harold for the next. Well, we will enjoy Harold, but we might have to really savor it because I don't know if they're going to be able to keep him this summer. But yeah, I think they've looked pretty good. The Philly game, they did not play particularly well, but the 76ers are also really good. Like, they've been destroying teams the past month or two. And, I mean, Embiid, I thought DJ did a much better job on him than in their previous game, but it just didn't matter because Embiid is so freaking good. And, I mean, they're just a well-balanced team. I've thought that they should have a better record than what they've had all year. I mean, Redick has been phenomenal for them. It still makes me a little sad to watch him do his thing elsewhere. Covington is a really nice 3D player. Obviously, Ben Simmons is, like, a phenomenal rookie. McConnell's a good – like, they're just a very good team. And I think they just outplayed the Clippers, really, and I don't think there's that much of a shame to it. I think it's a game that, like, ideally the Clippers would have won, but it's I don't think it was, like, that bad a loss, really. So, I mean, we're kind of leading into some of the Twitter questions already, but, I mean, just looking at the standings right now, I believe I'll need to check. I believe the Clippers are in ninth place right now, and the Jazz – they've won 10 in a row, I believe, maybe 11. They're just ridiculous.
Yeah, 10 in a row, 29 and 28. Yeah.
So the Clippers need to hold them off. They're only one game ahead of them right now, two losses. They're still only a half game back of Denver and New Orleans. Do you think the Clippers will make the playoffs at this rate? I mean, I think with the Jazz surging, it looks more unlikely than ever at this point.
Yeah, it's tough. I do think that, I mean, I always kind of figured that New Orleans would drop off. Anthony Davis is just on a mission right now. He's just playing like the best player in the league practically. But I just always figured that New Orleans would be the team that was out and the Clippers would kind of sneak in just because you can only keep up that team. Even with Mirotić, I didn't think that the Pelicans could keep it up. They're playing pretty well. I still do think that if a team fell out in the top eight, it would be them. But with Utah surging, it's tough. It's tough to say. They're only two back of the Clippers in the loss column. They have the same amount of wins now. They had a very nice win against the Spurs yesterday. They're a good team, and they're finally healthy. Mitchell has just been incredible. And he's garnering, you know, very real Rookie of the Year consideration, though I don't think Simmons should not be Rookie of the Year. But Mitchell's been playing very well. The Nuggets are like kind of a sleeper in the West. As soon as they get Millsap back, the Blazers are good. You know, I don't think the Blazers will fall out of the playoffs. They're also 31 and 26, which is a pretty decent cushion. Actually, no, 31 and 26 is also the same amount of losses as the Clippers. But I do think the Blazers are fairly decent. I don't know what's going on with Nurkic right now, but I think they're a pretty good team. And of course, the Thunder are not dropping out of the playoffs. So really, it was really a matter of New Orleans and the Clippers, and I thought the Clippers would be able to sneak in over New Orleans. They're playing well. I'm not sure how much longer they can sustain this kind of play, but now that the Jazz are right there, I don't know. It's not as high of a percentile as you would have thought just a week ago with the Jazz surging. The Jazz could always, you know, come down to earth a bit, but I think that the Jazz are good. So, I think the trade to get the dude from the Celtics. Yeah, Crowder. I think Crowder could do well with the Jazz. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens. But I definitely think it's gonna be a tight squeeze, and we'll see if the Clippers can kind of maintain this pace. I do think probably a lot of pundits around the league probably guess that the Clippers might slip out of it with the Jazz surging. But they'll have a chance. I don't think they're gonna drop out of the race anytime soon. I do think they'll lose tomorrow, and hopefully other teams will also lose at this rate. I know the Spurs are playing the Nuggets today, so hopefully the Spurs can win that game. Although, what is it, the second game of a back-to-back in Denver when the Denver is practically unbeatable? So I'm not so certain the Spurs will win this game either. So we'll see. We'll see, but it's not looking too great right now, and it feels like all the other teams are sort of on a roll. I do think New Orleans is going to come down to earth and have a decent chance of missing the playoffs, just because they kind of have an adrenaline rush right now with Cousins being hurt, and I guess they made a trade for Mirotić. but I don't know how much longer they can keep this up. We'll see. But I think it's kind of a matter of the Jazz versus the Clippers for that last spot, unless New Orleans completely keeps this up, which you never know. Maybe they could. Anthony Davis is a top five player in the league when healthy. So, yeah, I wouldn't bet for it right now, honestly, at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think the Thunder are definitely safe. I think the Wolves are literally only like a loss or two ahead somehow. I think both those teams are safe. They just have way too much talent. I think the Nuggets are pretty safe because Millsap is coming back soon. He's very good, and their young guys are getting better like with every game. So I think you can kind of throw Portland. I think they're safer than the Jazz, Pelicans, or Clippers, but they're really not all that good. They're still really thin behind Dame and CJ, and like one injury to Lillard. Obviously, I hope it doesn't happen, but one injury to him, and they're horrible. Like, they're bottom of the league bad, I'd say. And the Jazz, I mean, even though for as much praise as Mitchell's getting, their being good has really just been because Gobert has actually been playing the last few weeks, and yeah, he's been super injury-prone this season. If he goes out again, I think they fall back. So I think there is – I completely agree with you on the Pelicans. I would bet the most against them out of any team of those, like, what is it, like seven who are kind of fighting around, like, the 24 to 28 loss mark. But
if the Spurs lose today, then they have
24 too. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Clippers are only 4.5 games behind the Spurs. I mean, that's a fair amount at this point in the season, but that's still pretty crazy. And the Spurs have low-key fallen off a little bit, as have Minnesota. But, like, theoretically, if Denver surges when Millsap comes back, like, they could reach, like, three or four. I wouldn't completely rule it out. It'd be unlikely. But same with the Thunder. If all of a sudden they start clicking and Melo starts hitting shots, like, they could easily get to three. So, yeah, it's a complete mishmash. I would not bet on the Clippers. But, I mean, we kind of talked about this just about every pod, but, I mean, what's your thoughts on making the playoffs versus the lottery? I mean, I was looking at some mock drafts because it's finally nearing mock draft season, and I saw, I don't know how much you follow college basketball, but there are a lot of mock drafts that have Miles Bridges from MSU going to the Clippers, I think with the Pistons pick, but, like, oh, my God. He's really good. He would have been like top 7 or 6 last draft, and he was projected like that this season, and he's still having a really good season. I mean, if they somehow pick him up, and it would be with the Pistons pick, but still, like, if they got 2 lottery shots, which is a better shot at one hitting like the top 5 or 6, that's really tempting. This draft is really good, and even though it kind of falls off after like the top 7 or 8, having 10 to 14 guys in this draft who'd probably be like 5 or 6 in most drafts, that's franchise restarting material potentially.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't think their picks would be that much lower if they made the playoffs. Obviously,
yeah, that's the thing.
It would only be their pick, but it would rule out any chance of like a complete jump up. I mean, it's a low chance, but it would rule that out completely. So I mean, getting 2 lottery bites is really tempting. I'll need to start doing more draft research because I really have not done much, but man, I just don't know. It would be great for this team to make the playoffs. I think they really deserve it. I think Doc Rivers really deserves it. And if they make the playoffs, I think he's a pretty good shot at Coach of the Year. I think he's earned that. So really, I do still want them to make it just because I really want this team to have a shot, even though it's just going to get stuffed out against the Rockets or Warriors. But I think they've earned it. I think it's probably better for the franchise if they didn't, so I won't be too sad if they don't make it.
Yeah, I'm okay either way. Like, I think if they get the 6 seed, I think they could make some real noise, because then they would go either against the Spurs or the Timberwolves or the Thunder. I think the Thunder would trounce them. But I think they could definitely give the Spurs or Minnesota everything they can handle, and maybe even be some slight, you know, upset special there. I do think the Rockets would you know, probably beat the hell out of them. But it would be fun if the Clippers could somehow split those 2 games. Like, it would put a lot of pressure on the Rockets, and I would just love seeing Paul sweat it out, you know, for that series. But You know, with our heads, I'm pretty sure it's better if the Clippers are in the lottery. Like, it's just better. The only thing is, like you said, even if they fall, even if they get the 10th seed, let's say they fall behind the Jazz, it's the difference between the 10th seed and the 8th seed. It's not really that big of a difference. You know, why not make the playoffs and get some experience? Even if it is, you know, maybe to win a game against the Warriors would be a pretty successful season considering everything that the Clippers have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm probably more on the idea of my heart wants the Clippers to make the playoffs and my head wants the Clippers to tank and or not tank,
yeah.
but just make be a lottery team. But if I had to pick one or the other, I would rather see a few extra games in the playoffs and watch them
yeah.
do well. And I'm rooting. My biggest thing is just rooting for Blake Griffin to be terrible and the Pistons to tank entirely. So
yeah,
and they're doing a good job recently. So they've done very well being bad. So kudos.
Yeah, I know you don't have that much time today, but before we transition into Twitter questions and then wrap up, we should briefly touch on Blake and the Pistons. It's actually the first question is about that. So we'll kind of talk about both, which is at the same time. So we'll just transition, I guess. But Sham from Twitter, he writes for Pistons Power, which is the fan-sided Pistons blog. I actually did a pod with him last week about the trade, and he asked, are give-backs allowed? And that is a pretty common sentiment about Blake among Pistons fans right now. There was that brief honeymoon where they won like 4 or 5 in a row and they looked good. And now all of a sudden they look bad. Yeah. And I saw this post on Detroit Bad Boys, which is the Pistons SB Nation blog. And it was just this whole thing about Blake and how like he whines sometimes when he thinks he gets fouled and then doesn't run back on defense. And I'm like, yep. And the funny thing was the guy was like, yeah, maybe he just doesn't like Stan or something. I'm like, no, it has nothing to do with Stan.
No.
He did that all the time as a Clipper too. And I do not miss that.
I absolutely love the Stan Van Gundy, Blake Griffin dynamic. Cause you know, Stan Van Gundy has very famously been nicknamed the Master of Panic by Shaquille O'Neal. And it's not terribly inaccurate. And Blake Griffin just is constant, you know, he's a whiner. Let's be real. Like, we weren't shy to call Blake Griffin out on the fact that he complains too much to referees, even when he was a Clipper and doing great. He does it, and he was essentially the only guy left over from that Chris Paul era, and you know, with Austin Rivers also being, you know, an honorable mention, that complained all the time to the referees, and now he's still doing it. I saw the other day there's a highlight. I haven't watched too much Blake Griffin as a Piston, but I saw him accidentally throw the basketball at somebody's head. What was
Schroeder.
It? Like?
Dennis Schroeder.
And he did that Blake Griffin thing where he immediately apologizes and looks at the ref where he's like, I didn't mean to do that. It's such Blake Griffin. And the fact that Detroit fans or any fans around the league thought maybe he's going to turn anew and not complain at the refs. Look at Blake Griffin not complaining at the refs. Are you kidding me, man? Like, no. He's the same dude he's always been. He's going to complain to the refs. You're still going to get annoyed at it. If you've turned the other cheek and be okay with it, that's on you. But he still complains all the time. Like, that's always going to be the player he is. Unless he just decides to do it, like, year by year to finally calm it down. Blake has always been a complainer to the refs, especially over these last couple of years. And that's fine. Like, he does it. Most players do it. But luckily for the Clippers, they don't really have players that do that as much anymore. Maybe Austin will do it on occasion, but you know, Tobias Harris, Danilo Gallinari, Lou Williams—they're all pretty good at keeping their cool. And not only that, but kind of talking to the—not so much Tobias Harris, but Lou does a really great job of just trying to talk to the refs and like you know, have the Chris Paul arm on your shoulder, on your arm, or something like that, where he tries to suck up a bit without Chris's like constant yapping and yelling in between there. Like, we have a pretty mellow team now that Blake is gone. Blake Griffin is still a crybaby. Like, unfortunately, that's kind of his MO, and we didn't like it when he was a Clipper. We didn't like it at all. I don't think any Clipper fan liked when Blake Griffin complained, and he would literally just start cursing at refs, and you could hear it. Like, we would be watching on TV, and I could hear Blake curse. And it's like, Blake, stop that. Like, they're not going to give you a foul call in the fourth quarter with 30 seconds left if they remember that you just constantly chewing them out. And that's who Blake Griffin is. So there you go, little Caesar's Pizza Arena or whatever. Like, that's Blake Griffin for you. So
yeah, I mean, I think in the long run, it was still probably a worthwhile gamble by the Pistons, just because their franchise has been so stuck in the mud, and you know, they need to work on like the revenue building side and getting fans back and entertained. And I think it was still probably a worthwhile gamble from them, but I don't think that he's just going to change as a person or a player all of a sudden. And as a player, I mean, he's still really, really good. You know, even in their losses, he's been putting up big numbers. And in the East, he's probably an all-star if he's healthy, though honestly a fringe one because the East has gotten better. But, I mean, yeah, he's still really good, but I don't think he's a different person or player at all. And the Pistons are like 3 games back now of the playoffs, and I don't know. I don't think they're going to make it. I think if any team's going to fall, it's probably Miami because they've been struggling lately too, but they have a 3-game cushion, and Spoelstra just gets his guys to play so hard and so competently every game. Yeah. I don't know. Like, the Pistons might not make it, and if they do, I don't see there's any way they get higher than 8th. So,
top seven is pretty much a lock. I don't think the Pacers. Yeah. For a second, I was kind of concerned about the Pacers, but they're playing better. Milwaukee has Giannis. The Wizards are playing well, and they're eventually going to get Wall back. I don't know if Wall's back yet, but Beal's been playing really well. And I wouldn't bet against Spo. And you know, and mm-hmm. I like the Heat. I think that's a good team. The Pistons, like, those home games have been really sad. Like, I don't know if it's been due to snowstorms. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually in Michigan right now. Like, it is. Oh, okay. It is. There was a lot of snow. All right. I mean, that's not all of it, but yeah, it is. It was not advised to drive. I forget which game it was, but there was one game where there was, like, a public warning for people not to go.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So that'll get better, but I mean, it doesn't certainly help the team have any sort of home court advantage. Let's move on a little bit. So the next question is from my buddy Hugo at Hugo Katana, which is, who's in and out of the West out of Post, Blazers, Jags, Nuggets, Clips? Again, if I had to say, I'd say in is Blazers, Jazz, and Nuggets, out is Post and the Clips. You'd probably agree with that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I'm not counting them out just yet, but I feel like the Clippers are kind of like a Jenga puzzle right now. And if Gallinari gets hurt, then I feel like I'm very worried about when Gallinari stops playing this well and gets injured, because I feel like it's going to unravel the whole thing, and the forward rotation will be messed up. From Gallinari, we'll go to freaking Wes Johnson or whatever. And, you know, I'm not as worried about maybe the guards, especially the non-Milos guards, but, you know, I'm worried about when Gallinari eventually gets hurt. I feel like it's going to take away from the team a lot. And that's what I'm waiting for that shoe to drop. When it does, then I feel like the Clippers are going to be in trouble. But the Clippers are very good. I think they're going to be in the playoff chase this entire time. But the Jazz are just really coming on, and with Gobert healthy, it's just tough for me to bet against them right now. I think they're really quick and they're coached well. They have a nice team. And I think this was the team we kind of expected them to be coming into the year, where we thought very much that they would still be a playoff team even without Hayward. So, so that's kind of where I am with that. Unfortunately, you know, there's also I'm a Clipper fan. You're a Clipper fan. I think we're all kind of naturally negative when it comes to the Clippers being a fringe playoff team. You know, the last time the Clippers were on the fringe, I want to say it was the Elton Brand year, the year after they made the playoffs, and they somehow found a way to get out of the playoff race. And I think I don't think that that's that unfresh. I don't know if that's even a word. I don't know if that's necessarily out of the back of a lot of long-term Clipper fans' heads that, oh, man, like, the Clippers are just not going to make it. This Jazz team is good, and it's going to be tough. So, yeah, that's where I am.
I think that sums it up. Next question is Dennis Z at D-Money LA, which is, what are your top 5 realistic draft prospects? I really haven't done much draft research. Like, I vaguely know most of the players, but I really couldn't come up with it. I do like Miles Bridges if he's available. I think he's very good. I think that if there's any chance, I know the Clippers are kind of loaded at guard. If there's any chance one of the point guards, and I doubt Colin Sexton falls, but really a lot depends on where the Pistons pick lands. So it's kind of tough. It's a little hard to say right now, but I don't have a top five.
Yeah.
The next question is from, at LA Clippers, which is, it's not the Clippers, obviously. Is Doc still keen in developing the youngsters? Juwan, CJ, and some Darius seems to be. Doc went back to his old ways of playing the starters heavy minutes. G-Leaguers not giving ample playing time. I mean, I think that they'd still like to develop the youngsters, but if the roster is healthy, I don't really see a place. Like, maybe Evans gets spot minutes if the Clippers are getting beaten by some quick point guard who they just need to put a guy on to annoy. Maybe same thing with Thornwell or Wallace just getting spot defensive minutes, but I don't think they're going to if the team is healthy. I think they'd like to, but I don't think it'll happen. So
yeah, I can't hold it against Doc to play the players he's playing. They're better, and you know, Juwan Evans, it would be nice to have like a natural point guard kind of in the rotation a bit, but we're loaded at guard, unfortunately. I love Juwan Evans probably more than Thornwell at this point, who I also really like, especially coming into the season. But unfortunately, you know, I do think, you know, if Milos Teodosic gets hurt, then Evans can kind of just slot into the maybe 10 minutes or so a game for Milos. And that would be nice to kind of get him experience that way. And absolutely, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Teodosic will get hurt, you know, down the line this year. He's still fairly injury prone. But unfortunately for Thornwell, like, he's just lagging too much offensively. And Wallace is a nice little combo player. Maybe for smaller lineups, we can kind of mix him in there. But you can't really fault Doc for playing his guys. The biggest fault would be maybe, why are we giving Wes Johnson so many minutes? And I can kind of understand that. Even 10 minutes was a lot. But he had a plus 10.
Yeah.
You know, Wes, I think as much as Doc has been great, but the biggest thing is Doc gets too comfortable sometimes with familiarity. And maybe Wes Johnson is still a product of that. Where if you gave Wes Johnson a lot of them to Tyrone Wallace, for the most part, I wouldn't complain too much about it. Just because I think Wallace has more upside and probably a better player. And Wes just can't, like, you know, he was still 1-for-3 yesterday. And just, it's frustrating. But, it'd be great to see Doc play more of his young guys. But honestly, we're almost playing with house money because he's done so much good coaching with the young guys up until this point that now that there's really a playoff chase, I can't really fault him for playing them less. So, yeah.
So we actually have a ton of questions. I won't be able to get them all. If I didn't get to you, it's probably because your question is kind of related to other ones. So, I think we agree that the lottery is probably better for people asking about it. It's probably the better overall move for the franchise, but playoffs are probably what most fans would want. And I think there is something to be said for keeping relevant another year, making the playoffs, another year the Lakers won't make it. Getting that extra revenue is always nice. Obviously, fans don't really care much about that, but the team definitely does. And it's nothing to sniff at. And getting that little bit more exposure and maybe getting some of the young guys some minutes would be good. So I think the last question that's kind of really different from the others is from Thomas Sankara, which is at Ben Thrifty on Twitter. And it's favorite ex-Clippers wing from the Chris Paul era, which is a very different question. Who would you say is your favorite ex-Clippers wing from the CP3 era? I'm going to rule out, like, J.J. Redick. Technically, he's a wing. I mean, he was a little bit different, but
yeah, I'll rule him out, too. He would be my favorite, obviously. I think yours as well.
Yeah.
If I had to say, I kind of like Caron Butler the best. I already like Caron as a player before he was a Clipper. He's just like a really fun dude. He was always kind of doing funny stuff on the bench. He was fairly effective when he was a Clipper briefly. He had, what, did he have one quarter where he hit like 8 threes or something? Was that a quarter or a half?
He had a half, I think.
Yeah, he was still a fairly effective, you know, as long as Caron didn't put it on the floor very much, then he was still a pretty effective player. Of course, we can't forget the fact that he broke his hand and came back and played in the playoffs against Memphis. Tough juice, you know, personified. If I had to pick one, it's tough. I mean, I think it would be Karan. I mean, I don't know if we're including Jamal Crawford, probably, but Crawford.
I'd rule him out as well. And they were so much more tenured and long-term guys than.
Of the rotating cast of players, you know, I had a lot of great excitement for Danny Granger. He fizzed out really quickly. But I think Caron Butler might have been my favorite, you know. And there were a lot, but I think I really like Butler a lot. You know, I'm sure Joe Ingles would have been a nice player to have, but that never really came to fruition. Yeah. What about you?
Butler was so cool, and he was also like a free agent signing, which was like a big deal at the time. And obviously the Clippers had just gotten Paul and I think Billups, but it was still like a big deal that they were able to get.
Yeah, they signed Butler before Paul that off season.
Oh yeah, that's
before
right.
The
that's
Paul
right.
Trade.
Yeah, that is right. So it was like a big deal at the time because even though he was kind of old and he was coming off a bad injury, like he'd been good the season before at the Mavericks, and he was really well respected. He's a guy everybody knew. And the Clippers were able to land him. It was like, compared to the previous year where they got like Randy Foy and Ryan Gomes, you know, that was a pretty big coup. So yeah, I can't disagree.
Ryan Gomes was such a big deal when we signed him. It was like, this guy could be pretty good.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I enjoyed watching Butler. It was cool watching him on the Clippers, but he took way too many pull-up mid-range jumpers for my liking. He was awesome. He's like an awesome guy. He wrote a good book, which I actually read about like a biography type of thing. It was interesting. I mean, he was awesome. He'd be up there. I was tempted to say Hedo Turkoglu.
underrated.
Really. Yeah. In terms of just on the court, probably Matt Barnes, but he's just such a dick. It's hard to say.
Taking shots at the Clippers now.
Yeah, favorite, it wouldn't be him. It's a tough question. Alfred Camino was the year before Paul came, because he obviously went to Paul. Favorite? See, this is just, it gets me, because, I mean, they were so bad, most of them, that I've just forgotten them all. Like, I've just blanked them out of my memory.
Let me see if I can remember all of them. Who started the three? There was Butler. There was Matt Barnes for a good chunk of the whole time. There was
Luke,
Danny Granger.
Luke. Easily.
Oh, Luke. Luke.
Yeah, Luke. Yeah. It's Luke. Hands down. A nicest guy ever. Just came out of nowhere to be, like, really good. And, like, somehow he's having his best season at, like, age 32, which I guess is a thing now because Williams is also doing it. But, like, he's been really good for the Rockets. And he would be so good on this Clippers team. Like, imagine if there was a guy who, like, Harris and Gallinari just couldn't play defense on, and they needed a guy to just come in and lock him down. Just throw in Luke. He would get all of Decker's minutes, all of Wes Johnson's minutes. It would be amazing.
I miss Luke.
So, yeah, it would definitely be Luke. I can't believe I was thinking, like, farther in the past. I was tempted to say, even though he wasn't very good, I kind of just enjoyed the Randy Foy experience. He was just such a chugger. Yeah. But when he got hot, like he was scorching hot, he also had a game where he hit like 7 or 8 threes. It was pretty incredible. I'd say Luke, definitely. Caron is definitely up there.
Foy also had a revenge game where he had a game winner against the Clippers.
Yeah, with the Jazz, I think, right?
Was it the Jazz? I can't even remember.
Jazz or Nuggets. Maybe it's the Nuggets. Yeah, he's been around. But yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about? I'm excited for the game tomorrow against the Celtics because...
Mo Williams, by the way. Mo Williams had a pretty good year with the Clippers.
You know what? I wouldn't call him a wing, though, because he was more of a guard.
Yeah,
but I loved watching Mo Williams that one year because the previous year he was starting at point guard, and then all of a sudden they got Chauncey and Chris Paul, and he was a sixth man. And I remember like the first half of the year, he was incredible. Like, he was good the entire year, but, like, the first half, it was ridiculous. He, like, could not miss. But, yeah, he was always kind of one of my low-key favorite players just around the NBA. Dating, actually, from 2K, like, he was outrageous, and I can't remember which one it was. I think it was his best year on the Bucks. He was unstoppable in 2K. And Michael Redd. He's a good call. If you count him as because he played shooting guard, he might be it as well. behind Luke. But, yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about? The game tomorrow should be interesting.
I hate this game. Yeah. Let's hope that the Clippers can pull off that game. I'm not expecting them to win, but the Celtics are swooning a little bit right now. They just got dumped by the Cavs, and they lost a couple in a row. So, you know, on Paul Pierce's hilarious Paul Pierce day, where Twitter just eviscerated him, it was great. Not too many references to his Clipper days, where he was just a beyond trash player, like beyond trash.
Yeah.
Like literally.
I completely agree with Pierce. So I just thought of something we should probably mention briefly. What did you think about the Clippers not making any other moves outside of trading Blake? I was disappointed that they didn't trade. I want DJ just because I like DJ. I mean, I kind of thought they should probably have moved one of the Bradley, Rivers, Williams trio, even though I like all of them, just because there is a minutes crunch and I want to see the young guys get minutes. But I was a little disappointed. I think they probably could have gotten a late first back or maybe a couple early seconds, which would be really nice. Ryan, what did you think? I was a little disappointed, but I don't mind them going for the playoffs. And for settling, you know, if they don't want to take on bad contracts and if they decide they don't want these guys and just get cap room, that's not the worst outcome. So what did you think about that?
Yeah, I badly wanted them to trade Bradley. I do think that they would have gotten second rounders if they would have gone that route. Mm-hmm. But I think it makes me – I kind of feel like the front office was pretty much insistent on getting a first rounder, even if it was a late first rounder for Bradley. And it pretty much tied the Clippers' hands together because of it's been leaked that he wants a serious payday, and I don't think anybody wants to give it to him. So,
not a chance.
I really, really, really wanted them to trade Bradley just because I feel like the guard rotation is too much. I want Evans to get some minutes with him in our rotations, but I wanted him to be traded, even if just to get Juwan Evans minutes once he gets healthy. And the team just has too many guards. Tyrone Wallace, you know, however good Bradley is, and he is very good, Tyrone Wallace is a good defender himself, so we could have always kind of played Wallace. And, you know, Bradley's shot has been broken since he's been a Clipper, so, and it's been broken for a bit from three-point range, even though he's still respected out there. So I just kind of felt like he was easily replaceable, even if a player wouldn't be quite as good as him, considering all the guards we had. So I was fairly bummed out that we couldn't trade Bradley, but at the same time, I kind of get it, that we probably just couldn't get rid of him because teams didn't want to send a first pick in order to have the guy walk because they weren't willing to pay him. So I did think that the Thunder, for a good minute there, I really thought that the Thunder were going to get Bradley and were going to send their pick.
Yeah.
So
I thought the Thunder could have been, they have some young guys who are kind of interesting. I think they probably could have gotten two of their young guys for Bradley, or maybe a young guy and a pick. I thought the Wizards were also a decent candidate. Like, they're with Wall out, and now Frazier's out, and he wasn't even that good, and Jody Meeks has been horrible. I feel like they could have gotten something like Bradley for maybe one of their guys, like Meeks or Jason Smith, with like a matching contract, and then gotten like two second-round picks or something, which I would have done, but those guys do have like contracts going into next season. I don't think either of them are that horrible. Like, they're not bad enough to really clog up the cap. So for 2 seconds, I probably would have done it, but they wouldn't have been that good seconds, I guess. So I was kind of disappointed too. He was the guy I wanted them to move. The Lou Williams extension, I was happy about it. I don't think there's really that much. They got a great deal on him. I don't think he's going to be here for all three of those years. I'd be pretty shocked if he was. But I mean, that's such a movable deal. I like, he's been a great veteran presence. He's been obviously awesome on the court. So that was a fantastic deal. I don't know that there's even much to qualify about that outside of like Lou Williams for $8 million a year is a steal. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe by that third year, he's not worth it. But, that was fantastic. So yeah, I think that's basically it. The Clippers do only have one game, and then they go, obviously, on the All-Star break. So I'm guessing our next pod will be after the break, or maybe, probably just after the break. So the Clippers do have Lou Williams in the Skills Challenge, which nobody probably cares about whatsoever, and Tobias Harris in the three-point contest, which is kind of cool. I mean, I don't think he's a good three-point shooter. I don't think he has, like, any chance of beating, like, Eric Gordon or Klay Thompson. But, you know, it'll be fun. I'll watch that. So I guess tune in to see those two guys and get excited for the game tomorrow because that should be really fun.
Yeah, the Timberwolves and the Thunder are both losing right now. So feel free to watch those standings because I think things might be changing a bit. The Rockets are playing in Minnesota and Cleveland is playing in Oklahoma City. So those are both very losable games for those two. Plus the Spurs and the Nuggets it's a win-win either way. I mean, the Spurs aren't going to drop that far, but probably would be rooting for the Spurs at this point. But pretty interesting stuff going on right now in the standings. So it's worth watching. And as always, thanks for listening, everybody. Leave us a review on iTunes if you get a second. For Rob, this is Japan. Go Clippers!
Austin thought about the three ball on line, but jam! Wasn't a perfect pass, but a perfect reception. Sixth board.